I am happy, joyous, free now all the time. I am happy, joyous, free now all the time. I am happy, joyous, free now. I am happy, joyous, free now. I am happy, joyous, free now all the time. I am happy, joyous, free now all the time. I am happy, joyous, free now all the time. I am happy, joyous, free now. I am happy, joyous, free now. I am happy, joyous, free now all the time. It's December 18th, 1999, Saturday in the Absolute Monastery. Our topic today, our highest and best. And our song here from Should Be Coming Around the Mountain. I am happy, joyous, free now all the time. I am happy, joyous, free now all the time. I am happy, joyous, free now. I am happy, joyous, free now. I am happy, joyous, free now all the time. When we think about our highest and best, what do we think about? We think about that which is ideal and that which is perfect in man's eyes and that which the world expects the best for us. Our highest and best is to be Bill Gates and have his billions. Well, you haven't got his consciousness. Without his consciousness, you can't have his billions. Well, how about his wife? Without his consciousness, you can't have his wife. Well, how about Bill? Without your consciousness or his consciousness, you can't have Bill. Well, how about his babies? Without his consciousness, you can't have those babies. See, it all falls back to one thing. What is our consciousness? What do we have in our consciousness that is highest and best for us? Do we think what's highest and best for us is to have relationships? Do we think what's highest and best for us is to have friendships? Do we think what's highest and best for us is to have friends? One of our students called me the other day and said, I'm sorry, Herb. I'm sorry, Dr. Marley. I'm sorry, Dr. Marley. I offended you. And I said, no, you didn't do anything. Yes, I did. And now you'll never be my friend again. And I said, I never was your friend. It sounds cold, doesn't it? I never was your friend. I said, I'm totally unable to have you as a friend because I love you unconditionally. And a friend loves with conditions. I'll love you as a friend only as long as you love me as a friend. I'll be your friend only as long as you're my friend. I'll be your friend only as long as you live by the same parameters and priorities and stuff like that like I do. But to love unconditionally, that means we love without any judgment, without any conditions. No matter what the person does, it's like a father who has a son who commits some terrible crime, murders somebody or something like that, and the father says, I disown you. Well, man, that's the time the father is needed the most. The father should say to the son, I don't approve of what you did, but I stand with you as you face this test. I stand with you as I always stand with you. I believe in you as my son. You made a mistake. It was not a good mistake at all. It was a bad mistake. But I'll stand with you. And I'll always stand with you. I'll stand with you. Hey, now there is the real marriage vow, huh? Through thick and thin, I'll stand with you through whatever the problem may be. I'll stand with you through sickness. What do they say in the old marriage vows that we don't use anymore? In rich and poor, through health and sickness, we're married together. You know, how silly. That's conditional love. Unconditional love is, I'll stand with you because I love you. Because I unconditionally love you. Now, do you have the capacity to think about your highest and your best from an unconditional point of view? Can you think of your highest and best from an unconditional point of view? Let's just take Christina for a second. Now, Christina was out looking for a job. And when she was out looking for a job, she was looking for a job that was for her highest and best, wasn't it? Wasn't it? Mm-hmm. She wasn't looking for a job that was for her lowest and worst, was she? She looked for her highest and best. And then what did she do on every job she went to look for? She had to tell the people that she would only be there temporarily. She'd only be there a short time. She'd only be there to do this or that or the other thing. And the people said, well, we want a permanent worker. Well, what's permanent? Huh? What's permanent? If you say, I'm going to work for this company all the rest of my life, it's the most wonderful place in the world, and then somebody comes along 2 days later and offers you twice the salary, are you going to stay at that other company? Quite likely not. Quite likely not. If someone comes along and says, hey, you're working in the Alps, you're working up on the top of the Swiss Alps, and it's cold up there, and it's windy and breezy, and you're taking the thermometer readings for the temperatures and stuff like that, that's part of your job. And then along comes a guy, and he says, wow, you're a talented person. I'd love to have you work for me. Well, what do you do? Well, take temperature readings. Where? Well, in Hawaii. Oh, how fascinating. What do you pay? I don't care what you pay. I'd love to work in Hawaii, you know. I'd love to work in that wonderful environment there. But it gets cold on the mountain where you have to take a reading now and then. Yeah, but the rest of the day I'd be down in the valley. I'd be down by the ocean where it's lovely and warm. Yes, that's true. And we're going to pay you exactly what you're getting here, but we're giving you some more perks. We're giving you total health benefits, and we're giving you a car, and we're giving you this and that and the other thing, and a house. No doubt about it. No doubt. That's for my highest and best. And then you go out there, and in the Swiss Alps, you were Swiss, and so you live as a good Swiss person. But when you went out to Hawaii, you were away from home. You were away from your native Switzerland. And so then you began acting like a tourist. You begin acting stupid. You begin acting, you know, doing things that you really would never have done at home, like taking a surfboard and going out and riding the big ones and things like that. And you're not talented, you're not ready for it, but you thought that's part of Hawaii, is to ride the surf. So you go out and you think you're doing your highest and best. And what are you doing? You're not living within the scope of your being. And what is the scope of your being? What is your highest and best? I would say my highest and best is to live in a beautiful, healthy body, with a beautiful, healthy mind, with beautiful, healthy friends, with adequate or better than adequate income to handle my joys and desires. Oh no, my highest and best is to be Bill Gates. A billion, billion, billionaire. Oh, really? Can you count to a billion? 1 billion? Bill has many billions, but can you count to 1 billion? If you can count to 1 billion, you can have the $1 billion. Because by the time you count to 1 billion, you will be old and crutchety and gone. You won't, in your lifetime, physically, to count 1, 2, 3 up to a billion is impossible for you to do. You just cannot do it. Wow! Can you imagine that? Now, what would an intelligent person do? A person who sort of gets us around the game. Count to a billion. Let's see, 1 million, 2 million, 3 million. You know, there are ways. There are ways you can do any game you want. But would you feel honorable about doing it that way? If you could feel honorable about doing it that way, that's great. But the thing is, if you are a picky person who says, I have to go 1 penny, 2 penny, not only $1, you know you would not make it in this lifetime. You would not make it. And even if you counted it in the hundred thousands of dollars, you know, you wouldn't make it, because billions are lots, and 1 billion is a lot of $100,000. So, you see, what's your highest and best could be very simple and very easy for you. It could be very wonderful for you. But first, you have to decide who you are and what your values are. What do you think your highest and best is? What do you think which would make you eternally happy? Now, you got one choice, one chance. The golden goose or the eggs, you know. You got one chance. What are you going to select to be for your highest good, for your best? Now, are you going to select a perfect body? Presumably. A perfect mind? Presumably. Perfect relationships? Presumably. Perfect happy attitude? You know, perfect attitude? Presumably. Etc. Now, we haven't mentioned money yet. We've only mentioned the physical assets. We haven't mentioned money at all. Do you need money to be happy? We think it's nice, but do you need money to be happy? We sometimes think we do, and then we aim for money as our highest and best, but what is the answer? I am
independently
wealthy. It has nothing to do with dollar volume. It has nothing to do with dollars and cents or Swiss francs or Deutschmarks or what do they have in New Zealand? It has nothing to do with that. I am independently wealthy. That means whatever it is that would please me, I can do it. However, if we ever say, I can't afford it, then we are not independently wealthy. If we ever say, I am on a budget, we're not independently wealthy. If we ever say anything of that nature, we are not independently wealthy. What did you get? You got, let's see, you got a 40% increase, wasn't it, on your investment? About a 40% increase, or was it 28%?
25 to 30.
About 25 to 30%. She got almost a 30% increase on her investment, and she didn't even think about it. She just put her money in the program that Jeff had for her, and she got a 30% return on her money in the few months that she had it there, which is quite comfortable. Now, could we do anything with that greater return? Well, we could have 100% return. We could have 100% return on our money. We could have 200% return on our money. How much do we believe that's for our highest and best? Can you imagine a gambler going into a gambling casino and, you know, playing the crap table, and what does he do? He wins. And he's on a roll, he's on a winning streak, so what does he do? He keeps winning. And then all of a sudden, click, he stops winning. Why does he stop winning? Is it because that is the rule of the game? Does he stop winning because he has won enough? Does he stop winning because the place is rigged, the table is not honest? He stops winning because he gets to the point where he says, this is too good to be true. And he doesn't believe in himself anymore. It's too good to be true. It's a simple little feeling that comes through us. It's too good to be true. And lo and behold, it is too good to be true. It stops. But you see, when you speak for your highest and good, highest and best, you do not consider any limitations. You do not consider any abundance. If Bill Gates were ever to stop and think that it's too good to be true that his money is earning such grand amounts for him, because he's past that point now, although things could change, but he is the richest man in the world. In fact, he is the richest, richest man in the world. No man in the world has ever been as rich as he has. They say back in the days of Mergenthaler and Andrew Carnegie and a few of the other industrialists, at the time that money had certain values, that they had more money than he did on the percentile basis. But that may be true. I doubt that they could have bought nations like he could buy. If he wanted to go out and buy a couple of nations, he could go out and buy them. Because he has enough money that is far beyond the capital worth of any of many of the nations of the world today. Aside from that, what is Bill Gates' highest and best? Bill Gates' highest and best is to enjoy his job and his family and his work that he's doing, the job work, the things that make him happy. That's all. Bill Gates, having so much money, he said, after I retire, then I will go into the business of dispersing it to charitable institutions and stuff like that. He's not even thinking of how he would spend it, because he's already spending it. He is spending it on doing his work. He is spending it on his home. He is spending it on the things that make him happy. But you see, there are a group of people in Bill Gates' world who do this to Bill Gates. They push him down, and wisely so, because they don't want Bill Gates, who loves fast cars, to get in fast cars and kill himself. Because if he kills himself, I mean, if he is dead, then his charisma, his program would cease. Microsoft would continue, of course. The work would continue, all these things would continue. But here, this symbol, this wonderful icon, would be gone. And so the people in this world keep him in a modest frame of reference. Because he could buy a jet to the moon, he could buy lots of interesting things and scoot around. But they want him to be around. Now, they're a blessing to him in that respect, but they're also a curse to him. Because Bill Gates, I guarantee you, has his consciousness, whatever is the highest and best for Bill Gates has. You follow that? Mm-hmm. And he will not be killed. That's not in his consciousness. He will not be hurt. He will not be sick. He will not be having problems, because that's not in his consciousness. How well are you in your consciousness? What is the highest and best for you? Can you say what is my highest and best and then let it go and let it happen? You see, most of the time we say, well, my highest and best is that I marry this man. My highest and best is that I marry this woman. My highest and best is that I have that house, that car, that job, that circumstance. My highest and best is that I do these things. Well, that's not necessarily so. Your highest and best is that, number one, who wants to answer that? That you be...
That's sound and fun.
What? Yeah, that's the point. Be happy. Be yourself and have fun. Your highest and best, truly, that's the right answer. Be yourself and have fun. But I was going to say, your highest and best is to be happy. To be happy. And of course, being yourself and having fun is being happy. But to be happy. It's not having a man or having a woman. It's not having friends. It's not having the respect of the world. It's not having talents that are appreciated. It's not having any of these things. Your highest and your best is to be happy. To be happy. You say, well, Herb, how does that figure out with being a master? Hmm? How does that figure out with being a master? Because being a master, you know, I don't know how a master is. Is a master happy? Is the master living? Does the master have relationships? Does the master have friendships? Does the master have cars? Does he have boats and planes? Does he have toys? And the answer is yes to everything, but no to everything. A master has everything but possesses nothing. A master experiences everything but is touched by nothing. You see, if you allow yourself to be touched by anything, you're not a master. If you allow yourself to be possessed by anything, you're not a master. It's easy to say, my house, instead of the embassy. It's easy to say, my car, instead of the White Expedition. That's why I use the Golden Eagle occasionally, or something else, because I don't want to get into the habit of saying, my car, my cloak, my clothes, my computer. We are so in the habit of doing this. This is part of our master training. Every computer is our computer to use. Every car is our car to use. Every house is our house to use. Every swimming pool is our swimming pool to use. Every person is our quote-unquote friend. In other words, every person on the face of the earth is someone with whom we have a happy friendship, a relationship. You know, friendship puts it in a little different venue, but a happy relationship, right? Everybody, every animal. Last night I was sitting at the graphics computer, and while I was sitting there, Micho decided that he was going to sit on my lap. And he crawled up on my lap, and he stayed on my lap for half hour perhaps. He just did not want to get down. And I'd pet him once in a while, and then he'd stretch out, and he'd roll, and then he'd snuggle in under my arms, and he would just sit on my lap, and he didn't want to leave. Now, did I own that cat? You bet I own that cat. Did it matter to me? Not in the slightest. When I take Button and put him on my lap, he's perfectly content. He doesn't want to leave. When I'm done, he leaves. But you see, I don't need to own a cat to enjoy its total affection. I don't need to own a person to enjoy their total affection. I don't need to own a house to enjoy its total affection. I don't need to own anything, because my oneness with it is the highest ownership, if you will. My oneness with it means that it and I are one. There is no otherness, no separation. And in this beautiful feeling, what happens? I don't want the cat to sit on my lap. I just pet the cat, and next thing you know, there she is. He is sitting on my lap. I don't want Button to sit or not sit on my lap. Sometimes I'll lift him up and put him on my lap, but then I let him free. He can jump down anytime he wants. But he thinks that's pretty cool. And I don't want to use one computer or another. They're just all there for me to use and enjoy. So I go and enjoy them. This is being a master. This is the master consciousness. This is your highest and best. It is that you have all things. Well, now let's look at that from another point of view. Say, for instance, you're married, and all men are your husbands. Well, that's an interesting thought, isn't it? All women are your wives. But, you see, there is where you walk on fire. There is where you have a claim. If you say you are married, then the world is not open to you, because you possess your husband or wife, you possess this relationship, and this relationship and all that it entails is what you must live by, and that's honorable. why anyone in the world, well, they say to procreate children is why people get married and why they have, well, good. I would imagine, and perhaps I will be thrown into the pits of hell for saying this, but I would imagine that people who loved to be together and had children together would make far better parents than people who must be together because they're married and have children together. People who want to be together, I would imagine, make far better parents than people who have to be together because of marriage. It's something to think about. It's something to think about. If you ever have a relationship in your life, let that relationship be a free one, an open one, one without boundaries, one without strings, one without chains, one without balls that lock you into place. Those things just limit you.
Well, Herb, in God Unlimited, the Church of God Unlimited, you have ministerial programs in which you marry people and you do these.
Sure. Mm-hmm. If people want that, what is it that we say in our ministerial weddings for people? We say, be as two trees in the forest, two pillars of the temple, standing apart yet together, doing this thing. And encourage each to be themselves. Not the wife does this and the husband does this. Maybe, like in Sweden, the husband wants to stay home and take care of the kids, and the wife wants to work. Well, what's wrong with that? I gave a Mr. Candle tape the other day, and in the Mr. Candle tape I told the little children, now grab your teddy bear or your doll. And I said, it's okay for boys to play with dolls. It's okay for girls to play with teddy bears. You see, when we go for what's our highest and best, we don't limit ourselves. Siddhika liked to say that she was a tomboy, tom girl, as she was growing up, and because she enjoyed doing things that the boys like to do. She'd like to swing from the tree with her arms and do flips and run and play games and sports that were, you know, the boys' sports. Nowadays it's the girls' sports too, because the girls say, hey, I'm not going to be limited with what girls' sports are. I want to be free to be in every sport. But years ago, they had that limitation. Now, how did the limitation change? Because a few people thought, for what was their highest and best they wanted to be, and their highest and best meant doing something that was not socially acceptable. The girls didn't play baseball. And remember? No, you don't remember. You don't even remember the scripture. But when I was a kid, 3,000 or 4,000 years ago, when I was a kid, women playing baseball had to wear skirts. Can you imagine running bases with skirts on? And when they were swimming, men even had to wear things that covered their chest and even down on their thigh a little bit, the swimming suits. And women, my goodness, they not only had one swimming suit, but they had another and another with layers of fabric on it. If they went in the water, they drowned. The weight would pull them down. But you see, these are things of yesterday. And now they have skin-tight bathing suits, skin-tight soccer suits and what have you like that. And some are even naked. But the thing is, times change. Times change. Now, have the facts changed? Have women ceased to be women and men ceased to be men? No. These things continue, but the highest and best will out if you have the patience to wait for it. Of course, if you are speaking for your highest and best, then quite likely you're doing a good job up on top of the Matterhorn. And you're taking the readings up there of the weather. And then a tourist comes along from Hawaii and he says, wow, you're talented. Will you come and work for my company?
And you say, well, what do you offer? Well, number one, we're in Hawaii.
Yes.
Yes. You see, your highest and best will find you wherever you are doing your best in the highest, in the Alps. But it doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter what you're doing. It only matters that you're having fun doing what you're doing, and you're doing it to your finest and best ability. And if there is some greater glory to come to you, it will find you in the depths of hell. It doesn't matter where it has to go to find where you are. If you are doing a good job wherever you are, you will be found. And it doesn't mean that somebody is going to find you. It just means that who you are will be known. Because, in truth, who you are is known. If you are an evil person, it is known. If you are a good person, it is known. If you speak clearly and precisely, that you can be understood by everyone that you're speaking before, it'll be known. If you speak like they say of the Americans coming to Germany with mashed potatoes in your mouth, you will not be understood. When I was in Germany, people continually said, my goodness, you don't speak like most Americans. You speak like an Englishman, clearly and sharply. You know, this is how they speak in America? And I said, well, I lecture and I'm translated, and so I have learned to speak concisely, precisely, and slow so that my translator can translate what I'm saying. But aside from that, I always have spoken clearly and precisely. I can speak very quickly too. The more you're familiar with my English, sometimes I can come out very rapidly, as you probably have heard occasionally. So, in all things, wherever we are, we give our very best, and we give our highest. Now, what is that best and highest? That best and highest has nothing to do with anything in the outer. Our best and highest always comes right from within us, from this river of our divine self that's flowing, 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 ready to pour out. Stefan said the other day, yeah, how do you get in there to pipe it out? How do you get in there to open that dam and let it out, right? Now, how do you get in there and open that dam to let it out? How do you let it flow? And it'll keep coming, 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 coming. It will not stop. How do you open that inner reservoir? By being your finest and your best at all times. Can you ever be unkind to someone just because they're unkind to you? It's tempting. Someone says something unkind to you and you think to yourself, chew them up. Don't let it get started. The minute that, I'm untouched. No, 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 you don't push my buttons. No way. Mm-mm. No way. I know who I am. I am a nice person. I am not going to be pushed into having an attitude that is not normal for me to have. Every moment of our life, we are on top of that idea of being master of ourself. Ellen, what did you say when Stefan ran out the other day and you had to give the closing blessing? I am master
of my habit.
I am master of my habit. You've heard that before, haven't you, Stefan? I am master of my habit. Now, why did Ellen make that statement as our closing blessing at the table? Is it because she wanted you to be master of your habit? Is that what she wanted? Mm-hmm. She's worried about all of you being master of your habit? She was really concerned, wasn't she? Mm-hmm. Not one little bit. She was concerned about her
being master of her habit. And we always say affirmations that speak to us. I am master of my habit. I am independently wealthy. I don't care whether Siddhika is independently wealthy. I see her that way. She has to be that way because she is my world. But I am independently wealthy. I live in my eternally perfect
what? Spirit, mind, and body.
I live in my eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body. I don't live in Gertrude's eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body. She is a reflection of me. But she lives in her eternally spirit, mind, and body, and I am a reflection of her. Now, could you imagine Gertrude walking around seeing people who are not eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body? You say, well, she sees that occasionally when she sees someone who has got a bad foot or someone who has cancer or someone who is poor. She does see their eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body because that's what they choose to be at that moment and that is their perfection at that moment. You say, well, that certainly is an odd way of looking at it. No, it's not an odd way of looking at it. Every one of us expresses exactly the amount of perfection that we choose to have. Now, why, I'm not talking about myself, I'm not talking about myself right now, why do all of you not have the billions of dollars that Bill Gates has? Why do all of you not have the billions? Because that's not your consciousness right now. I'm not talking about me.
We have right now.
I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about you. Why do you not have the billions that Bill Gates has right now? You see, now let's just take all of you and say, Shazam! You all have the consciousness of Bill Gates right now, and every one of you is equally as wealthy as Bill Gates. In fact, you got the same investments that he does, and you have the same money that's coming in that he does right now. Well, Herb, that's a joke. No, that's not a joke. It's just consciousness. It's just what is it that's in our mind? What are we thinking about? What do we conceive of? Or would you think that if Ingeborg said, I live in my eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body, that she was incapable of experiencing that? You wouldn't think that, would you? You'd say, Ingeborg can have that. Ingeborg can have a perfect spirit, mind, and body if she chooses it. Ingeborg's perfectly welcome to have a perfect spirit, mind, and body. You don't deprive her of that, do you? You don't deprive yourself of it either. You say, I live in my eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body. And you may have some scabs on you, you may have some scars, you may have some whitchitchits on you, and so what? You see through that to your original purity and integrity. Because if all of you were to come to me privately, and come into my private inner sanctum. I have something in my private inner sanctum that would thrill all of you very much. It's called a delouser. I would delouse your diamonds of all their lice and polish them away, brush them away, put the pixie dust all over them and just let them come out pure and perfect. Your original purity and integrity. And what would we find if we looked at your original purity and integrity? What would we find? We would find perfection. We would find independent wealth. Not a bankroll of money. We'd find independent wealth. You speak your word and it's there. Right? Ellen would love to have a beautiful Maserati and a chauffeur to drive her around wherever she wanted to go. I mean, she wouldn't turn it down. She'd think that'd be cool. And so she speaks her word. I have this Maserati and a chauffeur. She doesn't care how he gets paid. She doesn't care who pays for the car. She doesn't care who maintains the car, fills it with gas, does all these things. All she does is say, I now have my Maserati. What color?
Red.
Gray?
Red.
Red. God, red. Fire engine red. Beautiful red. Can you have a red Maserati with a chauffeur? Woo, woo! Would she create an interesting picture around town? And nobody would even notice it. Because it's hers. She'd have it. She'd be driving it, riding it. She'd have her chauffeur handling it. He'd open the door for her as they came up places. And no one would even think a thing about it. Who would think a thing about it if the President of the United States came up in a stretch limousine and got out, and his driver opened the door for him, and he got out, and he shook hands with people and talked to people? Who would say, why are you riding in this stretch limousine? Why are you having a person driving your car for you? Why? They wouldn't question it at all, would they? You know Barbra Streisand? You all know Barbra Streisand. She's this movie actress who is very reclusive and very hard to get to know. But Barbra Streisand, she comes to many events in a stretch limousine. She doesn't own it. She doesn't want it. She has other cars. But for occasions. And she calls the stretch limousine rental place and says, send me a beautiful white one with white interior, with a beautiful, handsome driver and so forth, you know. And so the guy comes and opens the door for her, and she gets in, and her maids make sure that her skirt and stuff are fluffed inside the door, not hanging out the door as, as the limousine drives down the street with her skirt hanging out the door. And she's perfect. And then when she gets to where she is, there are some people to help her out to make sure that her skirt fluffs out properly. And then her hairdresser and so forth, you know, doing the last second before she walks before the crowd. That's no kidding. And she doesn't think a thing about it. She can afford it. She can handle it. Bill Gates doesn't care, but Barbra Streisand does. And so she walks out before the people, and she does her usual imagery to them, and they think she's just wonderful. Now, what's her highest and best? To be herself and have fun. Is she being herself and having fun? Is she having a ball? Is she doing all the things that delight her? Yes. She has a beautiful home in Malibu, I believe it is, and she has a big fence around it, electronic fence, and she has these big dogs walking around the inside of the fence, and then she has these big burly husky guards walking around. She thinks that people want to come and befriend her. And she doesn't want to be befriended by people she doesn't know. But that's her game, isn't it? And every once in a while she has to call the police to tell them about some person wanting to come and befriend her. She's creating that. Now, if she had no dogs, if she had no guards, if she had no fence, if she had just an ordinary lawn running up to her house, and she said, I surround myself with my pure white light of love, would she need any other device to discourage people from coming into her home? Mm-hmm. Not in the slightest. Would anyone violate another person's desire for themselves, your highest and best? You couldn't. What do you conceive as your highest and best? If you conceive as your highest and best to be protected, then you'll have reasons to be protected. If you conceive as your highest and best someone to handle your finances and your banking and stuff like that because you have so much money, you'll have them. You'll have them. If you conceive as your highest and best to have some your personal doctor on call for yourself, you'll need him. You'll need him. You know, it amuses me in some of these movies and the life stories of people. They're very wealthy, very wealthy. They could have the best advisors in the world. I'm available. They could have the best advisors in the world, but they don't do it. If they were to start saying to themselves, I am surrounded by harmonious beings. I am the pure white light of love. Do you know, they would enjoy perfect health. They would enjoy a life beyond. Why did the king of Persia ask Zarathustra to come and teach him? Why, when Zarathustra sent one of his students to go and teach the king of Persia, wow, what humility for the king. Why, when the king of Persia had this student from Zarathustra come teach him, his whole nation changed from a period of war to a period of peace, from a period of decay and lack to a period of infinite, infinite abundance, to the richest that Persia had ever been in its entire history? Now, here we are, and we know the story. You heard the story, haven't you? You know that story. Do you realize how foolish you are? Here, you know the story. Why don't you study the teachings of Zarathustra and see what it is that he taught this king and apply it to your own life? If it could make the king the richest kingdom of his time and the healthiest king and the happiest king and peace, it would be something to study, wouldn't it? It really would. I'm not recommending that you go become a Zarathustrianist. That wouldn't hurt at all, but I'm not recommending. I am recommending that you recognize that. That all Zarathustra said, to be your highest and best is to listen to this kernel of the seed that I give you and the wisdom that it reveals to you. Turn to that river, that divine river within you, and let it flow. Let it flow out. Seven says, yeah, how? Let it flow out. Let it pour out into our life and be in our life. Do you think I'm doing that to a degree? Mm-hmm. Do you think Zarathustra did that? Do you think the king of Persia did that after he listened and learned? Remember, first the king of Persia took that seed Zarathustra gave him and threw it on the ground, and he said, so that seed is your teacher. Ha! Ha! And stomped away. And you see, we oftentimes do this. We oftentimes take this seed, this concept, and throw it down and say, ha! That's not for me. And what does Katerina do? She says, hey, I'm doing my own thing. I'm happy. I'm creating around me beautiful people, beautiful circumstances, beautiful experiences. Does she make mistakes sometimes? Sure. Whenever she gets human. But when she remains divine, she has a beautiful life, a beautiful world. And look at Gertrude. Gertrude's life, too, has become more and more beautiful since she's met me. Since she's met me, her life has just taken an upsweep to the heavens. Well, not that so much. Since she met this philosophy and applied it to her life, all of the burdens of her world, poof, fell away. And she is able to walk happily, harmoniously, and smoothly. Sylvia will try to give you the same type of story, using different words and different illustrations, and she's right. Ellen will tell you the same thing. Ingeborg will tell you the same thing. Stefan will tell you the same thing. Zitika, Christina, Anita, you name them all. They'll all tell you the same thing, but what are they doing? Are each one of you remembering that it is your thought, your awareness of the highest and best that's within you that brings it out in your life, your thought of the highest and best that is your only experience? You see, a lot of people, I'll say to them, whatever is your highest and best, and they'll say, well, I don't want what's my highest and best. I want something good. Well, what a thing to have in your consciousness. But this is what people have. What's your highest and best?
Well, that means that you cannot do that anymore, whatever you've been doing. You've been playing soccer, and you can't play soccer anymore because that's not your highest and best. You've got to get down to the business of being a banker. And your highest and best is not being out in the world. Your highest and best is being in a monastery. I don't want to be in a monastery. I don't want to be a monk. I don't want to be tied down. I want to be free, 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 free. And so you stay free. Are you happy? Why did you want to even consider being a monk? Why did you even want to consider living in the circumstance? Because there all our thoughts are directed toward our highest and best. We do nothing except that which reflects our highest and best. We do not do anything that is for any other purpose than for the development of that which is the best within us. However, if we ever think we are given a dirtier deal than somebody else or a better deal than somebody else, either way, then you're in the wrong place. If you ever think that you're being misused or that you're just being a servant, you're in the wrong place. If you believe that you are being your highest and best and you are happy and you are filled with love and joy and peace and harmony and you feel that the world is just the greatest thing in the universe, then you're in the right place. But any time you think that anything is pushing down on you, anything is taking away your good, you're doing the wrong thing. If you think something is taking away from your relationships, you're doing the wrong thing. If you think something is taking away from your happiness, you're doing the wrong thing. If you think that you're not able to be free to go skiing when you want to ski, or go flying when you want to fly, or go to town when you want to go to town, or eat what you want to eat when you want to eat it, or stop doing something when you want to stop doing it, or do something when you want to do it, you're in the wrong place. We're here basically to learn to be master of our habit, master of ourself. And when we are master of ourself, then we experience our highest and best. Because when you're not master of your habit and yourself, you will say, this is too good to be true, when something beautiful happens and whoosh, it's gone. You will say, I better not eat this other piece of chocolate cake, it'll put 2 or 3 pounds on me. And believe it or not, that piece of chocolate cake that weighed only 5 ounces would put 2 or 3 pounds on you. That's your thinking. That's your stinking thinking. But you see, this is the thinking that you do to yourself constantly. And it is irrational. But it is rational as a human, but irrational as a master consciousness. We all want to live from the master consciousness point of view. We all want to live from the master attitude of who and what we really are. We want to live from this river within us that flows so fabulously, and right now it's just pumping against the gate. You know, you think that's your heart beating. That's really your divine self wanting to get out. That's not your heart. It's your divine self wanting to get out. Open it up and let it out. And when you let it out, then you'll want nothing. You'll need nothing. And you'll have everything. It's so wonderful. It's so beautiful and so clean and so easy. But we hide ourselves from it because we will not discipline ourselves. And self-discipline is so tremendously important. And self-discipline means that we take this nose of ours and we throw it away. We take this nose of ours and we keep it in our own business. We are not the slightest bit concerned what another person does. We're not the slightest bit concerned of whether we have an easy or hard job. Hey, I got an easier job than you have. Ha, ha, ha. You know, you've done that too. I used to take the boys to town separately and give them each a treat. And they'd come back and they'd say, hey, I had this, I had that. And then I'd take the next one to town. Hey, I had this and I had that. Each one had something different. I didn't dare give each one the same thing. I had to give each one something different so that they would be unique. It was of equal value, if you can say that, but it had to be something different. So, you see, so long as you play that children game, I got more than you did. Mama likes me better than she does you. I got a bigger piece of cake than you did. You know, so long as that ever comes into our consciousness, you say, oh, that's so stupid. That's so childish. Yes, and that's exactly what we are when we do that. Whenever we play that game that's too good to be true, whenever you think, now just stop and think for a moment now. Just, here's this naked man standing over here. You don't know who he is. He's just a naked man. No clothes, no identification. He has no false teeth or glasses or mustache or even hair shaved off. Just a naked man. And you look at him and you say, ordinary person. Normal, healthy type person, just ordinary. And then you say, what? Who's going to turn around? Bill Gates, will you turn around, please? There he is. You couldn't tell him from the next person on the block by outer appearances. Bill Gates' magnificence is within. Your magnificence is within. You have everything outwardly that Bill Gates has, boy, girl, notwithstanding. You have everything outwardly that Bill Gates has, but inwardly, he has built a self-discipline that has guided him to stand up and be himself under all circumstances and to be scrupulously honest. To be so honest that it sometimes squeaks, but to be true to himself, it's wonderful. Now, he's got nothing you haven't got, except the training you're going to receive here at the monastery, if you want to take it, of being master of yourself. And if you want to be master of yourself, you don't need the monastery for that. You can do this anywhere on earth, as long as it's your choice. You can be sure Bill Gates wasn't here. But it doesn't matter. But be master of yourself. Be master of your habit. What is your highest and best? To unconditionally be self-disciplined in loving yourself and your creation. And it's wonderful. I love you.